Yeah.
Has AC on one side and AC on the other.
No, I'm strictly AC. Okay, tonight, chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians. And you know what I wrote in my Bible over this chapter? No. I put my chapter 9.
Your chapter?
My chapter.
You feel close to it?
Oh, yes, I do.
We're going to find out.
It's my chapter 9.
Absolutely.
It's my chapter 9. And when we read this book, we all should attach to it. We should feel a kinship or some way we should feel drawn to this and being part of our lives. And all that is, I've been ripped in the past saying, who do you think you are comparing yourself to God, or who compare yourself to Jesus or the Christ or whatever? And my response to that attack all the time is this: who am I supposed to compare myself to? You? See, I'm not supposed to compare myself to any human being. I'm to compare myself only to Christ, right? Okay. So, I do compare myself to this. This book was written to me. Here's the way I look at it. This is a personal love letter to me from God. He gave me all the instruction, all the information I need. All I have to do is remember what He told me before the foundation of the world. Make sense? See? Sorry there. As I was sharing with Raymond and Jennifer last night, I told him, I said, that's the difference between church and religion. Is a true church is not trying to control you, but it's trying to raise you up so you can be independent. See? Trying to get you to the place where you can take care of yourself, and then you can help somebody else. They're not trying to keep you dependent. In the church world, or the religious realm, tries to keep you dependent upon the church so you'll never go away, so they can always have your money. And that's all it's basically about. If nobody put anything into the church, how many preachers do you think there'd be? Huh? There'd be a lot of them go find another job if they didn't have the security of having that check every week.
Okay. Somewhere in the Bible, the statement says that a soldier does not find it if you run in battle or you run
away. Read it tonight. You're going to hear it tonight.
Is that worth that?
Yes, it is. You're right on track, Bob.
All right.
Okay, chapter 9, verse 1. Paul starts out and says, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not you my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship, for the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. Mine answer to them that examine me is this: have we not power to eat and drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles and the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working? Who goes to warfare at any time of his own charge? Who plants a vineyard and eats not of the fruit of the vineyard? Or who feeds the flock and eats not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses that thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads out the corn. Does God take care for oxen? Or say it all together for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that plows should plow in hope, and he that threshes in that he that threshes in hope should be partaker of this hope. If we have sown into you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait on the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so has the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be done to me. For it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me, and yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed to me. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not the power of the gospel. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more, and unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by some means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partakers thereof with you. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. How now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an uncorruptible crown. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. This chapter is surely abused in understanding. It's surely abused by ministry trying to do exactly what Paul said. I'm not saying this so it'll be done to me. I'm just telling you the facts. Okay? You can't get around the truth, can you? And that's what Paul's telling us. But what's really amazing about this chapter, you know, in the first verse he asks you four questions. You know how many questions he asked you in this chapter? 20. He asked you 20 questions. So what's he trying to tell you about this chapter? You better get your caps on and start thinking. He's trying to tell you truth. There's 20 questions here. And it's not the game playing 20 questions. It's 20 legitimate questions that you need to think about. You hear me? And I'm going to expound them the best I can expound them to you. But there may be some things that you need to think about yourself for God to set right in your mind. Okay? So we're going to back up. Start with verse 1. And like I said, he starts out this chapter four questions right off the bat. He's trying to get your mind in gear already. So if we don't start with our mind in gear, you're probably going to end up someplace you don't figure you should be. You got to think before you take the trip. And that's in the mind. You got to think before you take that trip in your mind. He said, am I not an apostle? Well, it said many times here, Paul is an apostle. Okay? He's saying, what do you think? What do you think everybody thinks about Paul? Do you think everybody recognized Paul as an apostle?
No.
Absolutely not. He said, am I not free? Paul knew he was free, but do you think everyone else thought he was free? Sure, he's preaching to himself. So he's telling it to you because you and Paul are the same. See, that's why I said this is my chapter. This is my chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians. Because the same spirit that was in Paul is within me and you. There's only one spirit of God, isn't there? So we got the same spirit, so we should be thinking the same ways. I'm free. But there's a lot of people that try to keep me in bondage. I had a man just recently say, you need to get some music in here. You need to get started. You need to get the thing worked up. I don't feel nothing in here. And I said, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. You know, I'm not going there, see? I'm free. And God has not told me to go do those things on my own. He said, have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Well, you know what? I've seen Christ. And you need to see him too. You can if you open your eyes. See? You have to open your eyes. This is not something we're going to see someday down the road, are we? Jesus was already crucified resurrected and ascended before Paul came into the ministry. How'd he get a scene? He was in the Spirit. And he saw him in spirit. The Spirit of Christ was with him in the desert for 3.5 years, teaching him to start with, 3 years there in Galatians, and then another 14 years before he actually got to go to his ministry. He got 17 years of teaching from the Spirit of the Lord. You wonder why he filled up 17 years of it with the Spirit of God? He said, "Are not you my work in the Lord?" He saw life in people that he was teaching. Heads of the fruit. He said, "If I am not an apostle to others, yet truly I am to you, or indeed I am to you, because of the seal of mine apostleship, are you in the Lord." See, the sign of an apostle is someone who truly brings birth someone to the kingdom. Remember he said there's many teachers, but there's not many what? Fathers. It takes a father to bring someone into the kingdom. You can't birth someone if you're a baby, can you? And see, that's where the church world is so wound up, they think they're going to reproduce themselves, and all they're reproducing is a mud pie. They're not creating the fruit of the Spirit of God. The only way you can produce something is you've got to have that same seed in you. If I have the seed of Christ in me, what am I going to produce? The same thing. See, but if I have the duality, like James said, the double-minded man, I got the mind of Christ and I got that tree of knowledge of good and evil working in my head, guess what I'm going to reproduce? Confusion. The confusion. That's not going to work. Not in the kingdom. In verse 3 he goes on and says, "My verbal defense," not my answer, but "my verbal defense to them that examine me is this." Okay? Do you know how many times you have to have a verbal defense in what you're saying? I don't mean arguing and fussing with somebody, but you just explain what someone, when someone attacks you, you explain where you're at, and if they hear you, fine. If they don't, fine. Paul argued with them. Many people say, "Well, you don't argue when you talk to the Scriptures." Well, let me show you something. Turns to Acts 20. Acts chapter 20. Let me show you something. Acts chapter 20, verse 7. Okay, I'll give you a second to get there. Is everybody there? And the seventh verse, it says this: "And upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech till midnight." Well, you know what? I'm going to bust your bubble. Those words aren't correct. Okay? What it literally says is, upon the first day of the week, it should say this: mea sabbaton. All those words come out of two words: mea sabbaton. And it's upon one of the Sabbaths. Didn't say upon the first day of every week. That's mistranslation. It's not in there at all. It's King James language. "So upon one of the Sabbaths, when the disciples came together to break bread." I know the Church of Christ uses this as a doctrine. To break bread, you've got to have communion every Sunday. Not true, because that word bread right there is artos. It's leavened bread, and they say it's unleavened bread that you have to have communion.
What's the number of that word, you know?
Artos?
Yeah.
740.
740.
740.
That's in the Greek.
In the Greek, it's in the Strong's Dictionary right there. You can look it up.
I thought maybe you were going back to...
Mm-hmm. No. To the okay. No. That's in the Greek language.
All right.
Is there anything in the New Testament will be Greek?
Is that the only word that's mistranslated? The word
no.
Bread?
No, the first two words...
So upon is that the only time bread is mistranslated in Greek?
Oh, no, many times it is.
It is?
If they just say bread and the people interpret it being unleavened bread...
So has that translation 740 more often than once?
Oh, yes. There's many times in there. And if we back up, let me back up and I'll clarify that for you, Bob. Let me get into Matthew here. Matthew 26.
I don't mean to throw you off.
No, you're not going to hurt me anything. You're all right. 26 is what I'm looking for, I believe. Matthew 26, verse 17. Now, the word unleavened bread there is azumos. A-Z-U-M-O-S.
What's the number of that?
Can't remember the number of it now. I'll give it to you in a little bit, but I'll get it for you. Okay? But see, the unleavened bread there has got a word azumos, where the other one is artos. It's a raised bread with leaven in it. Okay. But it says, if they come together in the to break bread, Paul preached unto them. The word preached here is not the correct word. Guess what it is? Argued. Paul argued with them, ready to depart tomorrow, and continued his speech till midnight. He argued with them till midnight. I think there was a few hardheads in the group. What do you want to bet? See what I mean? So these words don't say it the way. So sometimes Paul argued with them. The language said so. Okay? Now, where was I at from back here?
That's why you're on your question number 5, having not the right to argue.
Mm-hmm. I was talking about them. We have to have a verbal. That was verse 3 I was talking about, Bob, in chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians, where he said his verbal defense, see, to them that examine, he is this: have we not power to eat and drink? Actually, it should say, possess we not the privilege to eat and drink? Okay? Colossians 2:16 says this: let no man judge you for meat nor drink, respect of new moons, Sabbaths, holidays, and all that stuff. See? Don't let anybody judge you for that. Okay? So he's saying here, don't we have the power to do these things? And the obvious answer is what? Of course we do. In the 5th verse, he goes on to say this: possess we not the power or the privilege to not lead about a sister, but the language should say, take along a believing wife. It said a believing wife. Okay? As well as what? The rest of the apostles. So what's that tell you they were? Married. And as the brothers of the Lord and Cephas, which is Peter. Peter had a wife. See, he's telling you about here, all of them had a wife. He said, we got the power to do that. We have the privilege to do that if we desire, right? In 1 Corinthians 6 and 12, it says this: all things are lawful to me, but all things are not profitable or advantageous to me. He said, all things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power or be controlled by anything. Do you hear that? See? And all he's saying is, God is first in my life. I can be married if I want to. I can eat and drink if I want to. Everybody else is doing their thing. I can too if I want to. But it's not profitable sometimes to do everything everybody else is doing. It's not profitable to do what they're doing. So you've got to make a decision. Is it more important to hear what God is saying in your life, or is it to keep up with the Joneses? Okay. Forget the Joneses. You know. You've got to do what God has set for your life. I was sharing with a lady today from Minnesota, and she left her husband, and he's from the Middle East. His name is, I can't remember it now. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. But anyway, he's from the Middle East, and he's very controlling. Very controlling. And she left him because, you know, he just wouldn't permit her to do a lot of things that was stupid. You know, couldn't go visit her parents, couldn't do this, couldn't do that, you know, just all this foolishness. So she finally left him, and she was in a lot of condemnation about it. And I said, didn't God make you a person? She said, well, yeah. And I said, well, then you can't be who you're supposed to be if you're letting someone else tell you how to live your life. Yeah. And he, in their culture over there in the Middle East, the men, they feel superior to the women, and they have a right to control. There's people in this country who do the same thing. You don't have to be someone from the Middle East. There's plenty of them right here that just live the lives, and the women ain't even allowed to say they're human, you know. Sure. Tell them when to get up, when to go to bed. Eat this, don't eat that. All kinds of foolishness. So it's not just them, but we need to have the right to do what we feel God has got us to do. Now, there's going to be times when Lois has got things she wants to do that contradicts things that I would want to do, or I would maybe think was even right to do, and the same thing vice versa, something I do that she don't agree with. But that doesn't mean we fight over it. But if I think that God's leading her to do something, then I don't have a right to question her in it, do I? And the same as if God is leading me in something, no one has a right to question me in what I'm doing. That's what Paul's telling us here. You're questioning God, see? And if I know God's working in your life, then I'm a fool if I'm going to argue with that. I'm a fool. But still, many people still try to control and manipulate their mates. And it shouldn't be. I don't want to control anybody. That's one thing that, you know, it's so easy for a personality like mine, as a sanguine personality, it's so easy for me in the natural, if I was natural and was not in the Spirit of God, it would be so easy for me to try to tell people what to do. I'm not stupid, I know that. And I have some good thought processes even in the natural. But see, that's not what it's about. Me knowing is one thing, but me forcing that upon someone else, that's the worst thing in the world you could do, to force my belief upon you. See? They want it. Yeah. They want you to tell them what to do, and then when you tell them something they don't like, then they get mad. But that's part of it. See, I don't tell anybody what to do, so I don't have to worry about that, do I? They're going to accuse me of it anyway, but I tell nobody to do anything. I tell you only one thing. Do what God tells you. That's all I can tell you. Okay. Verse 6, go on. He goes on to say, or I only and Barnabas possess not the privilege to forbear working, or literally not to work. He said, are we the only ones that don't possess the right to not work? Everybody else is laying around taking it easy, and we got to work. He said, are we the only ones that that don't have the privilege of not working? That's what the language says. And then he goes on in verse 7 to tell us an analogy. Who goes to warfare, or who serves in the military, at any time at his own expense? That's the verse you was referring to, Bob. Who goes to war? What man is going to war right now in the Middle East in our wars, and they're paying their own tickets, buying their own bullets, having to pack a lunch to go to war? It don't work that way, does it? Okay. Or who plants a vineyard and eats not of the fruit thereof? Or who feeds a flock and eats not of the milk thereof, of that flock? Say I these things as a man, or says not the law these things also? The law says the same thing. It's written in the law of this book, isn't it? Now, what's he trying to tell you? If you're a farmer, guess what you get to do? You get to eat from the fruit that you raise up from the land, whatever you reap from that land. If you're a carpenter and that's your job, whatever profit you make, that's yours to live from, isn't it? Whatever you do in this life, whatever position you are to make finance in this life, that's what your reward is, to live from that very thing. And he's pointing it out for a reason, because he has forbeared the whole thing because he didn't want someone to say he was taking advantage of somebody. And that's one of the reasons why I said this is my chapter. I haven't had a salary in 14 years. Okay. Why? Because I can't take it? No. Because if I take it, what's someone going to say? They're accusing me. I've already been accused of it. Look at him, he's driving a new vehicle. He's doing this, he's doing that. There ain't a dime of church money ever went into any one of my vehicles. Okay. And that's what we have to realize. That's exactly what Paul's saying. I don't take it. I know ministers that have all kinds of money and take big salaries from the churches. Why? I don't have a clue. When they could take the money and put it to the gospel's use instead of doing it for their own pleasures. I could use a lot of money. Couldn't anyone in here use a lot of money? But see, I've disciplined myself to live with a lot less than what I could live with so that the money can go back to the gospel. I want it to go back to the gospel. Okay? If I need it, it's one thing. I have a right to take it, but I don't take it. Okay? And that's what Paul's alluding to here. And in the verse 9, he goes on and says this, because it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle, and the word the mouth of shouldn't even be there, you shall not muzzle the ox that threshes the grain, not the corn, the grain. And then he says, does God care for oxen? The word take isn't even there. Does God care for the oxen? What do you think? He said he feeds the sparrows too, doesn't he? He takes care of everything. Yeah, I think he might care for the flesh just a little bit. I mean, we've been having a little discussion about some things, some people saying that God doesn't care about our flesh. Well, if God's got a purpose for this flesh being here, then he does care about it, doesn't he? Yeah, it's a vessel that he's using. It's his design. And so God doesn't see us as a piece of mud laying here on the earth. We're definitely his prized possession that he purchased. Okay? He says, does God care for the oxen, or does he say it entirely for us? What do you think? Why do you say these things? Do you think he's saying it just so he says, don't hurt the ox, let the ox eat? Or do you think he's telling us a truth that he cares about us? Which one's he saying? He's trying to tell you that God does care about you. It's not about the ox. The ox is a beast that's going to pass away. True or false? It's doing the purpose of God, but this is too. But he cares about this body. He cares about his ministry. He cares about all of his people. Okay? It says, for us, no doubt, for us is the reason. This is written. For us, this is the reason that is written. Because he that plows must, the word should is literally a word that says must or under obligation, you must plow. When you must plow in what? It says hope in the King James language, but you must plow with expectation and confidence. Now, do you understand what that means? I'm plowing a field out here, and if I have no idea why I'm plowing that field, I have no expectation of a reaping anything out, a crop out of that field, what's the purpose? There is none. He said it's a necessity that you're under obligation when you're doing this labor into the kingdom of God, you're doing it with a sense of understanding what the benefit of the harvest is going to be. Does that make sense? And that's what he's trying to tell us. You got to know there's a reason. You got to have confidence in what you're doing. And when you walk in the kingdom of God with confidence, religious folk will always tell you you're arrogant. Get used to it. He said they're going to say all manner of evil about you and lie about you and great your reward in the spirit realm. You know, don't worry about it. Okay? Don't worry about what they say about you. Do what your Father says. Question. Did Jesus seem concerned when people said bad things about him? Misquote. He had to be about his Father. He didn't care about everything else. I know what you did. He had to be about his Father. He didn't need anybody else to do it. He didn't need the security of a group of people to say, oh, he's a great man. Do you think he knew who he was, Bob? Now, if you don't know who you are, then guess what you've got to do? You've got to say, hey, no. I'm saying if you don't know who you are, you've got attached to somebody else in a group, in a united denomination, so you can say, we. That's what we believe. See, we got to get together with somebody else. Most people in church realm draw their strength from being with someone else, and they don't even know why they're there. Our preacher said it, that's it. Not what I believe. I don't even know what, most of them have no clue what they believe. I've heard people say this, what do we believe?
It's about imaginary time.
It is imaginary. It's a false hope. It's an imaginary thing. And someday it'll bust them right in the nose, but that's the way it works, see. Okay, let me finish this verse. It said, and he that threshes out the grain, he has to do it in what? The same thing. With expectation and confidence. Expectation that there is a reward. Hebrews said, you must believe that God is, and then he is a rewarder of those that believe him. He's a rewarder. I expect a reward. You know why I expect it? Because he said so. Not because I did anything, but because God said he rewards them. See? There's the thing. Proverbs 17:2 says, a wise servant shall have rule over sons that cause shame, and you'll have part of the inheritance among the brethren. See, I'm not looking for some kind of a worldly reward. God said to Abraham in Genesis 15, I am your great and exceeding reward. Guess what? I'm not worried about stuff in this world. I'm only looking for God being relevant in my life. There's my reward. Genesis 15:1. See, so I'm not looking for natural things. Natural things are for one thing, a natural world. It's all temporal. It's all passing away. It means nothing to me. When I pass, they can all have it. They can fight over it. They can claw over it. Do anything they want to with it because I don't care. I'm going to pass it on down and let somebody else worry about it. I'm not worrying about it now. If it burns down tonight, that's what the insurance is for. I'm not worried about it. Okay, but he that threshes out the grain, he must do it with expectation and confidence. And is the partaker of what? Not his, but this. He's a partaker. When you do it with confidence and expectation, you will be a partaker of that expectation and confidence. Does that make sense to you? If I'm working in expectation of something and confidence that it'll come to pass, it says then you are going to be a partaker of that very thing. It kind of sounds like the word faith. What do you think? Doesn't it sound like walking in faith? And you're going to receive the thing that you're going to that you believe you're going to receive. Now, I'm not trying to believe something like I'm looking for a new Cadillac or a new Mercedes-Benz. I'm only looking for the reward of God in my life. What greater reward could you have? See? If you have him, you've got everything. I don't have to worry about gifts because he's the gift giver. He's the fulfiller of all things. So I don't take my focus to material, temporal things, but I take them to the God things, and you don't have to worry about the rest of it. You don't have to worry about the fact that someone's going to call you crazy. Promise you, guarantee you, you'll be called crazy. If you don't run in excess and riot with them, they'll say you're crazy. That's the way it goes. They called all the prophets crazy. They called Jesus crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody's got to throw rocks. You know, there's a reason for rock throwers, too. We got to have someone to show mercy and grace to, don't we? Okay? Where am I at? Oh, verse 11. If we have sown to you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your fleshly things? Hello? He says, is it a big thing that if I sow you spiritual things that I should reap some of your natural, carnal, fleshly things? Would that be a big thing wrong? He's saying, what's the big deal? If others be partakers of this privilege concerning you, are not we rather? He said, shouldn't we be doing the same thing? If we are giving you spiritual truth and feeding you spiritually, why shouldn't the ministry have some of it? If I took my day and went and worked a job 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, do you think for 1 minute I could understand what I understand with God? There's no way that a preacher can go out here and work 8-10 hours a day, 5-6 days a week, and actually have something to give to somebody. Because he's already expended his energy before he ever comes home. And when his brain's half dead and he's tired, he's not going to hear anything that God says because his body is going to be talking to him. You've got to be fresh. The book even says, seek me early while I can be found. You don't need to be exhausted in study at 1 o'clock at night trying to get ready to preach a message the next morning. You ain't going to hear nothing. Huh? That's why they sell them on the internet. That's right, I forgot about that. You can buy you about 1,200 messages on there for about $25, $30. Of course, there's old moldy bread that was preached 100 years ago, but it's still one of them they fed, you know. Huh? Or they found another loophole. You want to hear the truth? Spend some time to gut with God when you're sharp, your mind's clear, when you get up and you're fresh. That's when you're going to get a hold of it. And sometimes it takes all day. There was a time today as I was studying today. I was in the Old Testament studying, and I got started, and man, I just couldn't get started. So I went up and done something else, and I come back, and I started a second time. And I got interrupted with some phone calls and some things, you know, and next thing I said, daggone, I still can't get myself started. So I went and got a bite to eat because I hadn't had lunch. I went and got a bite to eat for lunch, and I went back, and things calmed down, and I got into it. Sometimes you just have to fight through those things, those distractions that you got in life. And that's what Paul's telling us. We got to fight through this stuff and just continue on. Don't worry about it. Okay? He says again in verse 12, nevertheless, we have not used this privilege, but we endure patiently all things. Did he say some? What did he say he endured? But we suffer, but suffer all things in order that we should, or we, excuse me, the word should shouldn't even be there, in order that we hinder not the gospel of Christ. Now, so he said we should not hinder the good news of Christ by taking things for our own pleasure. He had the right to, didn't he? But it wasn't profitable for him to do it, was it? And he knew to step back. He said, it's okay. There's going to be times in our lives where in the ministry we have to take something. We have to learn, and I know a lot of people that wouldn't take it, and they're doing it out of a prideful thing. They're afraid to say, I need anything. See, that's a prideful thing. If I need something, I need it, and me saying, oh, I don't need it, it's not going to fulfill my need, is it? Sometimes I have to say, hey, I need something. If I do, I'll let you know about it. Right now, I don't need it. As long as I can get by without it, that's great. But at times, I've had to have something. Right now, I'm not. I'm blessed. I thank God for it. But I think the reason why my finances are in order is because I've been a good steward of what God has given me. And that's what we have to do, the same thing. We have to be a good steward of what God gives us, because He's not going to give us the true riches of the kingdom if we can't manage this beggarly elements of this world. This stuff, if we can't take care of this stuff, we surely are not going to ruin the kingdom of God. Okay? Verse 13. Do you not know that they which minister the sacred scriptures, about holy things, the words about holy things should say the sacred scriptures. Do you know not that they which minister the holy scriptures live, and the word live literally is eat. They eat from the temple, is what it should say. The ones who ministered, Paul was saying, they're talking about the temple back in their days. The Hieron is the word for it. It's the natural temple. And they had a temple, and all these foods and everything was brought to the temple, weren't they? They were all brought as offerings and sacrifices. Who got to eat those sacrifices? The priest. What do you think the pattern's showing? When it comes into the house, who's it to feed? Now, what a minute, Bob. But a lot of the priests were that way. But they weren't there. They were there because they weren't doing the things right. Okay? But the stuff comes in, and the people that minister the Holy Scriptures, the sacred Scriptures, they eat from that. And they which wait, or literally serve at the altar, are they share jointly from the altar. Do you understand that? They share jointly from the Lord. If they wait on the altar and make the sacrifices, they get to eat from it too, don't they? The people laboring into the truth, there is scripture that lays the foundation that they are to eat from it. What about the tribes of Israel? How many tribes were there? 13. Well, there were 12 tribes, but the Levites was the 13th tribe. And they had no inheritance in the land because they eat from the gospel. And they eat from what came into the temple. Okay. There's your pattern, what that money is for. If we get into tithing, here's what people don't understand about tithing. They think anything you give is tithe. There is three types of giving biblically. There is a tithe, there is an offering, and there's an alms. Tithe, we don't need to say a whole lot about it. We should understand that. If you don't, get with me later, because I don't like to preach on tithe. Offerings is a free will offering, anything you want to give. But you know what that offering's for? The offering is for the temple, for the house, to keep the building in order. Every time they wanted to fix the temple up, they took an offering in the Old Testament. Tithe was for the ministry to live from. Alms was for the poor. So three different ways of giving for three different things. Not what everybody thinks. It's not all the same. People's got lazy today and they don't split it up or whatever. Should be split up the way it's patterned in the book. Verse 14. Even in this way has the Lord ordained or arranged that they which preach the good news should live from that same good news. The fruit that good news brings in, guess what? That's the reason of it. Do you think God needs money? God doesn't need money. The money is brought in so that the people working for Him can have a living to live. You can't go out and work 8-10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and then have enough time to spend with God and have your mind ready. Can't do it. That's what He's saying. Verse 15, but I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things in order that it should be done to me, because it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying or my boasting in God void. He said, I'm not saying these things to you so you'll give me some money. I'm just telling you that's the way God set it up. And he said, I've not took advantage of all these privileges that I've had because I don't want it to come back and make me look like I'm misusing something. Verse 16, because if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory or boast of, because necessity is what? Necessity it rests upon me. Necessity rests upon me. I don't have any choice about it. Because woe is to me. The word woe is pain, grief, and suffering. See, pain, grief, and suffering me if I preach not the gospel. Literally it should say, unless I preach the gospel. If I don't do what I'm doing, then I'm going to be in some kind of turmoil and torment in my heart. Remember what Ezekiel said? It's fire in my bones if I don't say these words. I got to let them out. And what God puts in me, I got to put out, and it makes no difference what people think about it. Because everything God sent through His prophets, what did they do to the prophets in the Old Testament? Killed every one of them, one way or another. They killed everyone. Read Hebrews chapter 11, you'll find out just a little smattering of some of them. But there was a lot more than that. And they were all killed because they said things that the people in the flesh did not want to hear. But that's part of the price. Okay. Huh? 17, yeah. Because if I do this willingly, I possess a reward. Okay. I possess a reward. Not have, but I possess a reward. But if unwillingly, where it says against my will should be, but unwillingly, the word dispensation is not correct. A dispersing of the gospel is what? Let me say it again because this is all messed up in King James. But if against my will or unwillingly, a dispersing of the faith. If I do this dispersing of the faith unwillingly, man, it's just not going to work. Is it really going to help me in any way? If someone preaches the truth, what's it going to show in their life? You can't walk with your feet like this, pointing out to the sides. You don't make very good. Do you? Makes very uncomfortable and you don't make much progress in your life. In fact, I knew him, I won't even say his name, but he had a problem when he was a child and his feet was out like that. You ever see anybody try to run like that? They'll have to take two steps or three steps to every one you take. I mean, they could really be a fast person. This person could have been a very fast person if his feet would come this way. Lois kind of walked that way for a while when we was walking. And I showed her, I said, you know, you're walking more steps than I am to keep up because your feet are like this when you're walking out to the side. If you put them forward, you'll be much more comfortable and make a much better progression in your walk. But you have to discipline yourself to do that. Some people do and some don't. But she did a lot better once she realized it and helped her out in her walking. Okay? Then he says, verse 18, what is my reward then? Well, he's going to tell you now what his reward is. That when I preach the gospel, I not make, but I give the gospel of Christ without cost. There's my reward. I can give you the truth of God without cost. That's my reward. Do you hear that? I don't have to make any money out of it. It don't cost you anything. I've had men and women up and down this valley tell me, you can't give away everything you got. I can give anything away I want to. As long as my Father supplies, I can give it away. If He stops supplying, you know what that tells me? Stop doing what I'm doing. Real simple, isn't it? Don't have to be a rocket scientist or a mathematician to figure that out. If God supplies, that's what you do. If He don't, then He's not in it. So my reward is this. Just like Paul, when I preach the gospel, I give the gospel of Christ without cost, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. Do you know how many people have abused their power in the gospel and have become very, very wealthy? We don't have to mention names or count numbers because I don't know if you can count that high. Most of them are in it for the money. And they all say the same thing, not me. Check their check accounts. Verse 19, because though I be free from all, and the word men isn't there, I'm free from all, I have made myself enslaved to all. Now, there's a difference here. He's free from all, but he has made a choice to serve humanity. Can't say exactly where the verse is, but Paul said, I've been in dire straits. I could go on and be with the Lord, and that'd be better for me, but, you know, he needs me to stay here for you, so guess what? I'm going to stay here because he needs me to do something. He wants me to, so I'm willing to do whatever Father wants. See, that's got to be the cry of our hearts, just like he said it. You understand what I'm saying? Your desire has to be whatever Father wants. That I don't like this next word, might. It's not in the language. You can cross it out. You can read any book you want. It's not there. It's an added word. That I gain more in quantity. Hear me? That I gain more in quantity. He said, I've made myself a servant to them that I gain more of them. And to the Jews I became a Jew that I, not might again, but that I gain the Jews. Do you think Paul did it without thinking he could accomplish what he was doing? If God's telling Paul to do something, Paul didn't say, well, maybe I can do it, did he? And you've got to have the same mindset in you. If God tells you to do something, you can't say, well, I don't know if I can do it or not. Because you might as well not even take a step if you're thinking that way. Because you're going to fail. You already spoke doubt and unbelief into your heart right there. But you can't do that. You've got to realize that when God says something, you say, amen, there we go, I'll go do it. You can't stop and double think it, because if you do, you're just treading water. You ain't going anywhere. Stuck in the quicksand. So he said in verse 20, and to the Jews I became a Jew that I gained the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I gain them that are under the law. Not that I might. You can just cross all them mights out of there, and shoulds and coulds and maybes and all that stuff. It's not true. That's not even in the language. Verse 21, he says, to them that are lawless, not without law, but lawless, as lawless. He said, I became as one that was lawless. And then he puts in parentheses and clarifies something here. He didn't say he was going out robbing banks and killing people, did he? He says, to them that are lawless, I became as lawless, being not lawless to God, but subject to Christ. He wasn't under the law, but he was subject to Christ. See, there's a law in the kingdom of God that is an unwritten law on paper. It's a law that God has written in our hearts, in all the sons of God, and it's called a law of love. And the law of love is more binding and restrictive than any law that's ever been penned on a piece of paper. When you love as he loved, in the agape love, the unconditional love because you love him. We love him because he first loved us, right? That's the reason you do it. And with that in mind, guess what? You don't have a problem. It's all about serving what he wants, doing what he wants. Verse 22, he goes on and says, to the weak I became as weak, that I, not might, but that I gained the weak. He didn't do it so he could maybe get one. He did it because he knew that there was an expectation in his heart, like we talked about earlier. There was an expectation and a what? Confidence. He knew what he was doing was going to bring people back to Christ. He knew it. No doubt about it. See, and that's what we got to do. It ain't going saying, hey, come up here and cry and slobber on the front and hear something. Let me tell you the truth. And the truth is the only thing that'll change your heart. Me saying, this is too strong, you can't handle it. Who would I think I would be to say something like that? And I've heard many preachers preach that. Oh, don't say that, that's too strong for them. Well, if God said it, it's not too strong for them, is it? That's exactly what you need. The very opposition that God places in your life, they want to give credit to some devil. That's God working in your life. See? Get out of the way and let God do what he wants. Just like on our website, we have three verses up there on the main page. Acts chapter 20, verse 20, verse 27, and verse 35. And all three of them basically say the same thing. Paul said, I have not shunned to declare the whole gospel of God unto you. See? Taught it publicly. Showed it to you from house to house. I've not been ashamed of anything. I've told you the truth. Now, if the ministry takes and doesn't tell you everything that's here, what are they doing to you? They're lying to you. They're cheating you out of the truth. They're withholding the truth. And don't tell me you love me if you can't tell me the truth. That proves that what God's doing is right. They keep you bound up in religion. See, I can't do that. He said, I become, not I am made, I become all to all. The word things and men shouldn't even be in there. That's added words. He said, I become all to all that I, and cross that next word might out, that I surely, okay, by all means, those three words should be surely, that I surely deliver some. By all means, or surely, I deliver some. And this I do, and all this I do for the gospel. Not gospel's sake, but for the gospel. That I, what? Cross out that word, might. That I be a joint partner myself, period. That I be a joint partner myself. Okay. I'm going to read verse 20 through 23 in the Living Bible. Okay? Listen to this. When I am with the Jews, I seem as one of them, so they will all listen. When I am with the Gentiles, who will follow Jewish customs and ceremonies, I don't argue, even though I don't agree, because I want to help them. When with the heathen, I agree with them as much as I can, except, of course, when I must always do what is right as a Christian. And so by agreeing, I can win their confidence and help them too. When I am with those whose conscience bother them easily, I don't act as though I know it all and don't say they are foolish. The result is that when they are willing to let me help them, yes, whatever a person is like, I try to find common ground with him so that he will let me tell him about Christ and let Christ deliver him. I do this to get the gospel to them and also for the blessing I myself receive when I see them come to Christ. Says it pretty good, don't it? That was the Living Bible. Okay. Let me read verse 23 again. He said, and all this I do for the gospel, the good news, that I be a joint partner myself. He said, I'm not doing it just for you. I'm doing it for me too, because I'm going to be right there too. Okay? I'm going to be a joint partaker right there. Know ye not that they which run in a race all run all, but one receives a prize? So run, or in this way run, that you not may obtain, but that you possess. See? That you may possess. People think with the mind, they don't think about things, I should say. They don't think. Everybody's running a race. Only one wins the race, right? But see, that's in the natural. That's just trying to tell you, he's trying to say, run as hard as you're competing against someone to take the prize. But this prize is big enough for everybody. See, it's beyond this natural thinking of just one little ribbon that somebody's going to get. It's about the Christ. And see, everybody's going to get that prize, but he said, I want you to run like you're running in the natural. Run with everything in you to attain to that prize. Okay? And every man that strives for the mastery does what? The King James says is temperate. Literally the language says this. He exhibits self-restraint. Anybody that's a master in anything does not have anxieties in what he does he? He's very calm about what he does. He's confident. He has expectations with what he's doing. He knows that what he's doing is right. And again, when you walk in this place, you will be accused of being arrogant. Get used to it. It's no big deal. You know what you know. Nobody knows what you know any more than you do. And people can accuse you of all kinds of things, but you know what? They don't know what's in your head, do they? They don't have a right to judge you. Yep, just some little rocks or bumps in the road. You just step over them and go on. But every man that strives for the mastery exhibits self-restraint in all things. Did you hear that? Self-restraint in all things. Okay? Now they do it to obtain or to receive a perishable crown. But we do it for an imperishable crown. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty. See, he's not running with someone with no confidence or no expectation, is he? He's running with confidence and expectation. I know this. The book says, if you do everything, if you give somebody a drink, a prophet a drink, you'll have a prophet's reward. Did you hear that? You don't have to go change the world. All you have to do is be obedient. If I told Bob, hey, Bob, I want you to do me a favor. Would you go back in there and wash the dishes in the kitchen? And I don't have to tell you anything else. I just say, would you go wash the dishes in the kitchen? And you go in that kitchen and you say, you know, gee whiz, this floor looks pretty bad. I think I'll wax and mop the floor, mop and wax the floor. And you get down and you scrub that floor and you wax that floor, and I show up about 2 hours later and that floor is just a shining like a jewel. And I walk in and look around, there's dishes piled everywhere, yet it's dirty, and you say, look what I did, look at that floor. Are you obedient? See, God does not have to explain to you what he's telling you to do. What would happen now if I bring in 100 people and I'm going to feed them and got no clean dishes? Got a beautiful floor. Are we going to feed them on the floor? See? Is that what we're going to do? No. See, that's what I'm saying. It's not important that we know everything God's doing. We know we've been told to do something. What should we do? Do it. See? That's the only way we're going to get in the kingdom. In the kingdom of God, that's the way we have to work. See? I'm not talking about listening to people. I'm talking about listening to God. Listen to God in you. Okay? He said, I'm running that way as certainly, so fight I. Not as one that thrashes the air. Someone who's unconfident, who's not confident in what he's doing. No security. No expectation in his life. That's what people are doing today. And they say, we're serving God. God is not confused. He's not. He has a purpose and a plan. Does this book not say in many occasions, my plans and purposes will prevail? True or false? And he says it. Okay, if he's got a plan and a purpose, guess what? It's going to come to pass. He's not running people out here and running you off a cliff somewhere. He's got a purpose for everything in your life. But you have to get some direction in your life. You have to exhibit some self-restraint in your life. You have to have some confidence in your life and some expectation. And the only way you're going to get that is through the Word of God. Be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, so you will know that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. Only way you're going to get it. Jesus said it another way. If you continue in my word, you'll be my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and that truth that you know shall make you free. Guess what? It's all about the word. The only way I'm going to get expectation and hope, confidence, faith, it's going to come through this word. It's not going to be running around saying woo, woo, woo. It's going to be about knowing what God said. It's nothing about emotions. It's about knowledge. And he is a God of knowledge. Then something tells me if he's a God of knowledge, then I need to get some of it. I need some of his knowledge and his wisdom. I don't need emotions. Jesus had emotions. But emotions will deceive you. He controlled his emotions. So it's okay to have emotions, but guess what? They shouldn't direct you in what you do in your life. You should tell your emotions to shut up. Like Mark said, slap that woman in the mouth. Talking about his soul. Tell her those emotions to shut up. Can't do it. Can't go with her. You got to shut up. Okay? Verse 27. But I, the words King James says keep under, it should say this. I subdue my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself become unfit. Did you hear the words he said? I subdue my body. Does that sound like his emotions is controlling him? Ain't no way. Just like Jesus, no way. And I bring it into subjection. That means you are telling your flesh what it's going to do. Your flesh says, I'm hungry, and I say, shut up. You'll get it when I'm ready. I got things to do. See? You can't have any confidence in what the flesh tells you as being right. It'll squall and scream and cry and flail and have fits. But when you bring it into subjection, when you discipline it, guess what? You won't have a problem with it. You need to learn to discipline yourself. You can't. Nobody's going to do it for you. You take somebody and force them into that situation, as soon as you turn them loose, where are they going? Back to where they was. I guarantee you. You got to do it because you know it's right for you and it's what God wants in your life. You can't do it because someone tells you to do it. That's why I gave up a long time ago trying to tell people how to live their lives. They won't listen anyway. Will they? Excuse me. So in this chapter, can you understand why I think this is my chapter? It's my chapter, the whole thing, but this chapter really relates to me in a lot of things of being in ministry. It sure is. But Paul wants you to really think about these things. He didn't ask you 20 questions so you can forget it. He wants you to think about each one of those questions. And you ought to go back and go through this thing and look up all these questions and find out what he's trying to portray to them. I've done what I can tonight with the time I have and the limited place I am, but that's what I got for you. A little focus on them wouldn't hurt, would it? And God can open a lot of things up. And see, when I look at a verse, I can see some things. But every one of us are in a different position. Each and every one of us. And when I see something in here, you may see something totally different and both of us be right because of the position that you're standing in. Yeah. Which lap of the race are you on? Who knows? See? Only God knows. And when you're running a race, you can only see from where you're standing. Huh? I certainly hope I'm on the home stretch. Huh? It's the living word. It's always growing and expounding. And as long as we're willing to go with God, it's limitless. We're unlimited where we can go. It's how much you're willing to give up of this world. He said, my disciples are not of this world. If they were, they'd fight. So guess what? I'm happy to be an alien. No. No limits. Whatever he wants us to do, wherever he wants us to go.